this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. Welcome to episode 74. I'm sorry if the sound quality is not as good as it usually is. I'm recording this without my microphone. I actually am at the place where I host a weekly support group. For those of you in the LA area, I run a support group in San Marino, which is adjacent, basically Pasadena. If you're on the west side, it's Pasadena. And on Thursdays from 1 to 2:30 at the family room, which is a great place that has like mommy and me classes and birthing classes and all those baby through preschool related classes that you might want to take. And we're here, we're free, I'm here today, and the air conditioning is blasting because, you know, it's Pasadena in July, it's a little hot outside. But I thought I would just get this recording done and this intro set because I am so excited for this week's episode. This week we have Tyra. And she did this interview with me about a month ago. She still has postpartum depression, and when we were doing this a month ago, she was fully in the darkness of postpartum depression. Tyra is the mother of two, a two-year-old named Madeline, and a baby, Desmond. And she had postpartum depression and anxiety with her first child, and did everything she could that she thought she could to prepare for baby number two and to avoid having another round of postpartum depression and anxiety. But as she talks it through, we can see that the best laid plans sometimes are just not enough for, you know, to defeat the darkness and what your hormones and, you know, how they change your brain and what they do. I'm really, really proud that we have this episode because most of these episodes are moms who have survive the darkness or are on the verge of conquering the darkness. And Tyra did this interview from like the actual darkness. And so I say I'm proud of Tyra, not me. I'm so proud of Tyra for like having the courage and the bravery to do this, because when I was in her position, I was ashamed of myself. I thought I had to keep my feelings a dark secret forever, and I didn't have the energy to talk on the phone to my best friend, let alone talk on the phone with a stranger I've never met and share my story and bare my soul publicly for a podcast. But Tyra did it, and I hope this helps those moms listening who are currently in the darkness, because I think postpartum depression is one of those things that you can understand it somewhat once you've recovered, but you cannot truly understand what it is like to be depressed or what it is like to be anxious unless you are actually right there. And that's a good thing. It's nice to know that you get over it, and it's sort of like a contraction. We talk about this during the interview. I remember that contractions, when I was giving birth to Pippa, I remember they sucked, and I don't ever want to feel that way again, but I can't actually fully summon up the experience and memory of a contraction. You know, those feel-good hormones come along and they wash away how awful giving birth is. And I think it's not so much that feel-good hormones come and wash away depression, but it's that it's a fundamental change to your brain's chemistry. And once you get your brain and your body back to where you need to be, you just can't identify with people who are there. You can sympathize and you can sort of empathize, but you can't fully be there with them. So I'm so glad that Tyra is here to hold the hands of all the moms who are listening who are actually currently in the darkness. And for anyone listening who is a friend or a relative, a loved one who is suffering with postpartum depression or any of the other maternal mood disorders, I just love that you can hear so much of what it's like and maybe learn something that will help you support your loved one. Okay, so that is enough of an introduction for me. Let's turn this over to Tyra. Hi, Tyra. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Courtney.
So I know a lot about your story, but where do you think is the best part to start? Do you want to start with how you're feeling today, or should we go back with your two-year-old?
Probably let's go back with my two-year-old, since things kind of hinge on that experience.
Okay, let's go there. So you have a two-year-old?
I do. I have a two-year-old. She is wonderful now. Her name is Madeline. I call her Maddie. And I have like very little anxiety about her today, but she is the one that my postpartum anxiety and depression started with. So I will say that, like many of the women that you've interviewed, I have a history of anxiety. I never really felt like it was a big deal. I guess when I was a kid, it was a big deal. I had really bad anxiety when I was very young, and I remember seeing psychiatrists, and I was actually placed on medication when I was really young. And interestingly, it was around a really specific phobia. I learned this term just like a couple months ago. I was an emetophobe, which means I was scared of vomiting or throwing up. I remember I had this like really bad stomach flu when I was 6 or 7 or something, and it like must have imprinted on me in some very strange way, because from then on for the next several years, I was like terrified of throwing up again. And I did all these weird kind of OCD behaviors to prevent that from happening. Like I wouldn't eat the same food that I ate that night ever again. And I like flipped the way I slept in my bed. I remember I just did all these really specific things to try and control not throwing up again. And it spun out of control, and I had to, of course, see some doctors and was in therapy. That sort of ended abruptly when I was 12 or 13. It just like stopped. I wasn't on medication at that time. I actually wasn't seeing a therapist. I just sort of grew out of it, is how I thought about it. And I didn't struggle again like that really until recently. I'd always been sort of an anxious person. I like worried a lot about school and then work. And I'm a physician, so I went to medical school and found that very stressful. And residency was very stressful. And I seemed to worry a lot more about my training than my peers did. I didn't think too much about it because, like, hey, medical school is super stressful. Of course, you're nervous and worried all the time. And then a year after I finished residency, I got pregnant with Madeline. It was a wanted pregnancy, although I will say I actually, for most of my adult life, didn't think that I wanted kids. And my really wonderful partner, Brandon, is very, very important for him to have kids. We talk a lot about it. And right before we started trying with Maddie, I sort of come around to the idea of having kids and recently gotten on board and was like, okay, I can do this because you're so wonderful and you know you're going to help me a lot and I'm still going to have my career and let's do it. And I got pregnant sort of right away. And I had a very normal pregnancy that I was extremely anxious about. I was like on my medical websites all the time looking up, is this normal? Is this normal? She was breech and she didn't flip, and I sort of obsessed about that for a while and tried to get her to flip and did all those crazy things where you're hanging out upside down. And I went to acupuncture and I did one of those things where they tried to turn her an external version, which was horrible, and she didn't turn and then eventually just scheduled the C-section. The C-section happened. It was easy and pretty wonderful, and recovery was physically easy. I was fine. I had such a straightforward, like really wonderful C-section experience with her. But that first night that she was born, like from that moment, I was so anxious. You know, I remember having this thought when I was pregnant. I was like, I just can't wait till she's out because then I can see her and know that she's fine. When she's in my belly, I was like, God, what's going on? Is she dead? She hasn't moved enough. Was that a spot of blood on my underwear? Like, oh my God, I just can't wait till she gets out because then I'll know she's fine. And then she came out and it was like, whoa, I don't know she's fine. Like, this is actually horrible. Everything is 10 times worse. She's crying all the time. Am I giving her enough milk? Like, what the heck is going on? I felt like I never knew she was fine. And in addition, I didn't know I was fine anymore. And it was just like so much worse. So yeah, it was like from day one, I was pathologically anxious. I had, like many women, so many issues with breastfeeding for her. I really wanted to breastfeed. From in the hospital, she had a bad latch and I had a low supply and we couldn't figure it out. And you're feeding her with like a syringe and all this stuff. And she was angry because she was hungry. And so she didn't sleep. And it all felt like it depended on me to get her to be happier and to get her to sleep if only my body would cooperate. And it wasn't cooperating. And that cycle, all of a sudden ingrained in my head, I think really strongly. And I couldn't break free from that cycle. We went home. She actually was fine. Maddie never had issues gaining weight. She was always like in the 90th percentile, but she was very, very colicky. She cried all the time, was one of those like high needs babies, but just, oh God, she was just so hard. She didn't sleep well in the beginning. And she was, if she wasn't nursing, she was screaming. The only way she would sleep was in this wrap, the Mobi wrap that we lived in that first month. One of us was always wearing it, and we'd just trade off, passing her back and forth, trying to soothe her, or I'd be feeding her. She was so hungry, and I had it still sort of struggling with my supply. So I got this idea that, like I said, my body needs to make enough milk. And if my body makes enough milk, my baby will be happy and my baby will sleep and then I will sleep. And that was the like core belief. If I don't make enough milk, none of us sleep and we are all unhappy. Well, I didn't sleep. I think I was up 3 days straight, those first 3 days. And then I was sleeping like a couple hours here and there every day for the first maybe 2 to 3 weeks. And by 3 weeks, I was a mess, like a complete mess. We were going into doctor's appointments for Maddie, and we see a family doc. And so it was really convenient. She could see me and ask me about myself. She's my doctor too. And I love her. She's wonderful. I knew I was in trouble, and I was very forthcoming with her about that. And we both agreed that I had major postpartum anxiety with depressive symptoms as well. And it seemed like I was just way too exhausted. It was like for sure precipitated by lack of sleep. So she did a couple of really wonderful things. Probably the best thing she did for me was convince me that it was okay to take a bit of Ambien, because I was just, even when Maddie was getting 3 hour stretches, I couldn't fall asleep. I was so nervous. I medicated myself, zonked myself out, and slowly Maddie started to improve. And slowly breastfeeding started to get a little bit better, and all of the external factors were improving. But I was not. And that is when I realized I had this problem. My primary care doctor also prescribed me an SSRI. She gave me, we decided Lexapro. I obsessively researched all of them, talked with my physician's friends and lactation consultants and my OBGYN. What's the best one? Which one isn't going to get into the milk? Which one isn't going to drop my milk supply? Which one isn't going to affect the baby? And we decided on Lexapro. I think I took it for like 3 days, and Maddie got a little fussier on the third day, and I was like, nope, it's the Lexapro. I'm not taking that. It's affecting my baby. I won't take it. I'm just going to get through this myself. So that didn't happen. I saw a couple of therapists that my PCP referred me to. It was really hard because my husband was back at work, and so it was me and Maddie, and I had to bring Maddie to therapy sessions. And I remember I was like so stressed about breaking our routine and the nap routine. And I would get her finally to the office. And I remember I had like 2 sessions where I was pacing around the therapist's office, like shushing Maddie in this Mobi wrap because Maddie did not sleep during the day and she just screamed. And it was like, how am I even supposed to talk to you? Like, I've got this thing screaming in your office. Like, maybe you're getting a vision of what my life is like, but I can't work through my anxiety issues like this. I stopped going to her. and just suffered for a really long time. Friends offered to help, family came and would try and offer to take Maddie away for a day so that I could just try and recover, but I wouldn't let anybody help. I wouldn't let Maddie be away from me because I thought my milk supply would drop. I didn't trust that the pump was going to work. Also, she was refusing a bottle, of course. So lots of people were saying, oh, God, you're so stressed out about breastfeeding. If this is not worth it, switch to formula. We bought formula. She never took a bottle. She actually never took a bottle her whole life, but especially with, like, she would scream at the sight of a bottle. And so it was like, I must feed her. If I don't feed her, nobody sleeps again, and she's not getting milk from any other source other than my body. So I couldn't, like, be away from her, and she wanted to eat, like, every hour during the day. I mean, I really couldn't get away. I just came up with more and more reasons to avoid being healthy, and I sort of isolated myself from friends and family. I felt like I couldn't go out. I didn't want people to come over because they'd mess up whatever crazy routine I had set in my head that I had to stick to. I totally didn't understand how other new parents did it. Anyways, that was then. Around 4 or 5 months, I started engaging with this really, really wonderful, she called herself a life coach. And we did phone therapy sessions, and it was great because I could, like, pick up the phone when on my schedule when I felt like it was going to work for me, and I didn't have to go anywhere, and I don't have to bring the baby. If I had to, like, stop to breastfeed her in the middle, it was okay. And this person is just, like, an incredible, talented, wonderful. She would not call herself a therapist. She wasn't formally trained, but she does strategies around mindfulness and cognitive behavioral therapy, and she does a lot of thought reframing and getting at your core values and all of that. And I think it was the difference. At this point, you know, maybe I was also less tired and my hormones leveled out or whatever, but I sort of stabilized aside from still being really rigid about Maddie's schedule and my pumping and feeding times. I remained extremely controlling about that until we weaned, which I don't think we ever would have weaned. We weaned at 18 months, and that would not have happened if I hadn't have gotten pregnant again at 18 months, and my milk supply dried up at that time. So now we're at 18 months. Maddie's not a colicky infant anymore. She's actually very pleasant. We're having a great time. It's a fun year. Once breastfeeding was out of my life, I was, like, way less anxious about everything else. And I felt pretty glorious being pregnant, mostly because I wasn't breastfeeding. Like, I remember thinking, oh, my God, I have 6 whole months until I have to breastfeed again. This is amazing. And I'd be at work just, like, remembering how I'd have to pump in between patients and feeling so happy that I didn't have to do that and lugging my pump around in the car and all that. And just, like, I appreciated it. I knew it. It felt good. And my second pregnancy was, like, wonderful because of that. Of course, I knew I was at risk for postpartum depression again. And so I did all I could. I shouldn't say that, but I restarted this therapy sessions again. We talked a lot about how I was going to be the second time around. What tools could I bring into my life? I really struggled with, gosh, should I just go ahead and start an SSRI now? And in the end, I couldn't do it. I was too afraid of how it might affect the baby. There's not very much research. I say that, it's ridiculous. I'm a primary care doctor, and I counsel patients all the time on staying on their SSRIs while they're pregnant because there actually is decent data out there that it's in a high risk mom, it's way safer to be treated than to not be treated. And I know that, but I don't feel it for myself. I also tried to get my head around maybe you should not breastfeed the second time. It was such a trigger for you. What if you just do formula from the beginning? And I couldn't get there. I just couldn't. I can't even explain it. I can't explain it. I couldn't get there. But I thought it was going to go better because I had all these great tools from therapy, and I had, you know, everybody says it's easier to breastfeed the second time. Your body knows what to do. It, babies are easier. There's no way you're going to get two colicky babies in a row. Everything's going to be easier. Like, you've got this, basically. And I believed that. So we had the second kid in March. His name is Desi. And the first month was actually great. It was to my expectations. He was an easier baby. He didn't cry all the time. We would like set him down in the rock and play and just stare at him with our mouths open because we could never have set Maddie down, but he would just like sort of chill there and maybe even fall asleep. I mean, we were like, wow, miracle baby. This must be how parenting was for our friends. And this is what we didn't understand. Breastfeeding was fine. He latched. I actually have tons of milk this time. My body, I'm an overproducer now. I'm like pumping off lots of milk because I produced so much, and I was sort of elated about that. And he was sleeping better than Maddie, not long periods, but better. And then at about maybe 6 weeks or so, he started to develop some very minor health issues. It started off, we thought it was reflux. He started refusing feeds, which you can imagine is just this like huge trigger for me. Oh my God, my baby won't eat. Shit. He was arching away and crying every time I'd nurse him. Nursing wasn't soothing. When he was crying, I'd always put him to my breast because with Maddie, that was the only thing that soothed her. So that's what I needed to do. And I'd put him there and it would make things worse. He'd arch away, I'd spray milk everywhere. Like, oh my God, what do I do? He doesn't want to nurse. I don't even know what to do. So the doctor thought it was reflux. We put him on meds. Maybe it got a little bit better. I have this crazy overactive milk letdown that I'm like a fire hose. And he now has been diagnosed with laryngomalacia, which is this like floppy esophagus valve problem that really can't handle my milk letdown. So we switched to bottles, and he also won't take a bottle, totally refuses. We try a million different kinds and times and people giving to him and all the things. He's refusing a bottle, so it's just me. Maybe 8 weeks into it. It was 8 weeks because I took him to his 2-month appointment and we weighed in and he had dropped growth curve percentiles, which was like, oh God, that was my biggest fear with Maddie. And I sat there in the office looking at it. He dropped, it wasn't even huge. He dropped from like 35th percentile down to, I don't know, 20th or something. So he hadn't even lost weight, but he just wasn't gaining fast enough. And our doctor was like, yeah, you know, she was really reassuring. She wasn't concerned. She wanted to see him again a little sooner just to make sure it wasn't getting worse. And she said, actually, it sounds like he has maybe an intolerance to dairy. Why don't you try cutting dairy out? And from that moment on, the anxiety was just there. And I was like, oh, no, like something about my body is wrong for this baby. And not only is he like crying and refusing to eat, but again, he won't take a bottle, and it's up to me to control this. So it turns out he does have a dairy intolerance. We've just been like testing his poop, and he's got microscopic blood in his poop, which is like pathognomonic for these intolerances. And it's not just dairy; it's also soy, and I've cut out eggs and nightshades, which I didn't even know was a term. I cut out, there's like tomatoes and potatoes and peppers, everything spicy, plus no dairy, no soy, no eggs, and no nuts. And that's like everything. So, like, I'm not eating anything. I like eat 10 avocados a day, and that's how I get my calories in. And life sucks. Like, I can't eat anything. My kid doesn't want my milk. He won't take a bottle. And he started to have major sleep issues. He now won't sleep unless he's sleeping on top of a human. We bought this expensive bassinet called the Snoo because I was so scared of sleep after our experience with Maddie. The Snoo, we're like the one set of people the Snoo doesn't work for. He won't sleep in a crib. He won't sleep in a swing. He won't sleep in the rock and play. He needs to sleep on a human body. And like, it's like my worst nightmare being realized. That said, logically, I know he's actually okay. We're going to get through this. Reflux gets better. He's not losing weight yet. He's otherwise healthy. He needs milestones. There's no like reason for him to be, you know, hospitalized or any of that. Everything's actually okay. These are pretty mild issues in the grand scheme of things. But I'm just spiraling sort of out of control. Every time he cries, I feel like it's a crisis or doomsday, and I just feel like I'm sort of reliving my experience that I had with Maddie, only now with Debbie.
You know, the thing that strikes me as you're telling the story is that you actually sound okay, which is how, like, you sound like a mom who has her shit together, and yet your universe is falling apart, and that's just how deceptive this experience is. Because I know from your emails and just from the story you're telling that you're in hell.
Yeah.
And you don't, but your voice, you know, your tone of voice sounds like you're okay.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I am okay. Like, I'm also surviving. I have all these resources. I have such a wonderful husband who stays up with this baby at night so that I can sleep. I have a nanny that's like super experienced and wonderful and offers to take both the kids so that I can go get some me time, which this is like one of the first times that I've actually done that. And I'm freaking out right now. Like, my heart is pounding. I'm, you know, 10 feet away from them listening to every single thing that's happening. Is he napping? Is he eating? Is he going to try a bottle? Am I going to have to end this phone call and go feed him? Like, I'm actually freaking out inside, but I do feel like I have so much insight. I think because I've been dealing with this for a long time, because I already experienced it and recovered, and because I'm a physician and I'm like super familiar with the symptoms, I have all this insight and I know what's going on. And at the same time, that doesn't matter. So like, God, it's so funny that you say that, because I get really frustrated with my husband a lot of the times, because I talk with him about, I'm having a bad day, I'm panicky today, I'm super anxious. And by the afternoon, he'll like be asking me, do I want to go to dinner with our friends? Do I want to have so-and-so over? And I'm like, are you kidding me? I just told you I like had a panic attack this morning and I'm nauseous and I feel like I'm not going to be able to pull through today. And you're asking me if we can go to dinner? Of course not. Are you insane? And he's like, well, you sounded okay this afternoon. You sounded good. We were laughing. We were like talking about various things. Like tell me more about the panic. And so I try to tell him about my inner monologue, kind of like what I just did with you right now. But I'll wake up. The baby gets up at 5:30 in the morning, and no matter what, it's like nothing's okay. And I wake up when he doesn't. I just am in a complete panic, like sweating, crying, breathing fast, heart pounding. If he sleeps in a little too late, that's wrong because his schedule's going to be off. If he gets up a little too early, that's wrong. Because how am I going to manage to nap him long enough and take care of my two-year-old? And like nothing is right, and it's all on me, and he's not going to get better. And my whole life, every time I'm talking to somebody, every time I'm doing anything, I have this background buzzing in my head that is like obsessing about his sleep and his eating and his weight and his mood and I mean, just everything. I don't feel okay inside. I feel very, very not okay.
It's almost like, I mean, you're just reminding me so much of my experience, and it's reassuring to me because, like, writing my book and describing the hells I went through, I was like, how didn't anybody
not pick up on what was going on. But, you know, talking to you and seeing that you had like the same sort of divide where you can, there's like a rational part of you that's like, this is okay. But that doesn't make it okay, the other part of you that's in hell okay. That you can't reason with depression and anxiety.
No, I have tried, and everyone around me has tried. My husband says that I am very hard to help. He tries to reason and talk through logic a lot, and like I have a defense reason against every single thing that anybody says, why it won't work, why I can't do that, why we can't do that, why we can't do this. Yeah, you cannot reason.
Yeah, I always feel like depression and anxiety, they come in and it's like you're asleep and it's like they fuck with the settings in your brain. And then you wake up and it's kind of like you wake up and your vision has gone from 20/20 to something like absolutely atrocious, but you have no idea that you've had like this huge vision change.
Yeah, they're like foreign thoughts, but they're still presumably my thoughts. And so it's all I know how to act on. Even though I know these are bad thoughts, they still seem right in my head, or I guess correct. I know that they're not right, but they seem like the correct thing to do, and like
So you're not back on an SSRI yet, are you?
really good question. So I emailed my doctor and said, you gotta give me something. Let's do Zoloft. That's like, the most well studied and the least likely to get into milk. So I have a bottle of Zoloft. And I have taken a couple of days, and I felt so badly once I started taking it. I felt really nauseous and lightheaded, and I can't figure out if it's a real adverse side effect or if it's not, if it's my brain playing tricks on me. But I feel really bad on it, so I cut back. I halved the already lowest dosage that I was taking and down to 12.5 milligrams. It's like a homeopathic dose. It shouldn't affect me at all, but I still feel nauseous. I, of course, found some evidence that all SSRIs can drop your milk supply, which is not an actual side effect of them. Like, hardly anybody's milk supply drops, but there are moms who report, yeah, I took Zoloft and my milk supply went down. It's insane. Like, if that happened to me, that would actually be okay because I have so much milk this time. Actually, it could even be good because maybe it would help my milk let down and I wouldn't be like fire hosing my kid. But because of this really ingrained fear of losing my milk supply that I think I developed with Natty, I'm just like paralyzed with fear. I'm like pumping extra because I'm on it and I'm so worried and I feel physically bad, and I don't know if I can take it anymore. Like I feel like I'm actually worse on it because I'm so in my head about it. The anxiety has been at its worst this week since I've been on it. So I don't know what the right thing to do is. I honestly don't know what the right thing to do is.
Where do you,
I also,
and
sorry.
I know you said you can't explain it, but when do you think you got this like in your head that you had to breastfeed? Because listening to your story, I'm just sitting here kind of like my rage is just rising and I'm also like tearing up because it's just like, what have we done to ourselves that we've created this, that there is a real pressure to breastfeed?
There's such a pressure. I mean, I suppose it started before Maddie, and I read all the things and lived in society and breast is best and all of that, and I want to give my kid every possible chance. So I decided I wanted to, and I always thought, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. There's always formula. Formula's not the worst thing ever. Hey, maybe I can breastfeed sometimes if my supply is low and we'll get formula the other times. I was like open to that. I don't think formula is bad inherently. But for whatever reason, I think it was when Maddie was refusing a bottle, I like it feels like I created this really strong neuronal pathway that was like, if you don't breastfeed, nobody will sleep and nobody will be happy. And you must do this to make it work. And I just became obsessed with it. And it's like the one thing that I could control, at least through pumping, I could keep my supply up. And Maddie wanted to nurse, so like I could do it. And when I couldn't control anything else about her, I couldn't control when or how she slept, what her mood was, like how I was able to soothe her. I couldn't control any of that, but I could control the milk. So I clung to it and I controlled the shit out of it. Like I really controlled it. And I knew it wasn't healthy for me to breastfeed Desi. I knew I'd probably be a happier person if we did bottles. But that felt so foreign and scary to me for some reason. I had all these fears about bottles, like, God, is formula going to be constipating for him? Is he going to be really gassy with bottles? We don't know how to do that. We don't have any of the bottles. Breast is best. And I know how to do it. Like, I can do this. I felt like, yeah, I don't like breastfeeding, but I can, like, put my head down and do it, and it's going to be easier this time. So, like, give it a shot, and if it works, then great. And in that first month, it worked, and it was great, and I wasn't stressed about it, and I had a ton of milk, and he was latching, and it was fine. It was then at the 6 weeks where shit fell apart, and I couldn't get out of it at that point. Not only is he not taking the bottle, and we can't, like, do the starve him out until he takes a bottle plan because he's dropping on his growth curve, so we don't want to starve him right now. But I just, it's like already there. I feel like I, for whatever reason, I have to keep going. And I just, I'm paralyzed. I can't stop. It's so weird. It's so awful.
How did, with Maddie, how did like the depression and anxiety, how did that affect your bonding with her? Did you feel?
Oh, man. I did not bond with that girl until much later on. I remember the first time I felt like I actually loved her was a couple months into her life. And I knew it was okay and it was normal. Like, I actually went into pregnancy with my eyes wide open about mood disorders and, like, what is normal and what's not normal. And I knew, like, not everybody bonds and that's okay. And I identified it right away. And like, man, I am not bonded with this child, and I'm actually scared of her. Like, this is negatively affecting my life. I remember we went to this parenting group. We have this wonderful thing in Seattle called PEPS, which is some acronym that I can't think of right now, but it's where they match parents in the same zip code together with the same due dates. And so there's like 8 or 9 families with the same age babies that get together and just talk about their parenting experience. And we went to our first pets group. And that's when I realized actually that Maddie was a different baby than everybody else, because everybody else brought their babies in car seats and half of them were passed out. It was like 2 or 3 weeks at this point. And I was like, oh my God, how are your babies sleeping in a car seat? This is insane. Maddie was screaming and we had her in the body wrap and we were like taking turns walking around the block to get her out of the house so that the group could go on. And everyone went around and shared their birth stories and their like parenting stories. And I think we went early and I was like, I'm going to just lay it all out there and I'm going to be super honest. And I was like, I'm really struggling. I'm so exhausted. Breastfeeding is so hard. Like, this isn't what I thought it would be. And then one by one, everybody else talked and they were like, you know, we're so tired, but we're so in love. And this one couple said, we can't even imagine our lives without this baby anymore. Like, this baby is part of us now. And I looked at her and I was like, the first thought that popped into my head is literally all I do is think about my life before Maddie and how much I want to go back to that. And I got into the car on the way home and just like, oh God, just thinking about it, I cried so hard and was like, oh my God, I want to go back to a time before this so badly. This was the wrong decision. I shouldn't be a mom. I'm doing horrible at it. And I want it out. I don't want to be in this life anymore. I don't want this child. I just want to go back to being a happy wife of Brandon and doing my doctor thing. I'm like, this is not for me. Yes, I didn't bond with her until much later on. We then bonded very tightly once things got better and she got less colicky. And she's been like a pretty hardcore mama's girl ever since. We have a great relationship now that she's a toddler. I love her very much and think that she's awesome. I actually felt like I bonded a little more with Desi, maybe because there was space too, because he wasn't crying all the time. Maybe it was in my head because I wanted to bond with him right away. I felt like this is my chance to experience parenthood. Yeah, but now we're just right back there again, and I'm having those thoughts like, why did we do this? Things were stable with one. I got the parenting experience. Why didn't we have another one? Like, why did we mess up everything? Am I going to be normal again? Is this it? Is this the thing that ruins me? This might be the thing that ruins me. My husband's going to leave me. I'm going to lose my friends because I can't get back to normal. Like, why did I do this to myself?
How has your relationship been with Maddie the past couple of months? Is the depression and anxiety making it hard to mom both her and Desi?
Yeah, it sucks. I think I'm doing a pretty good job of faking it around her. She's two. She doesn't really know. She's seen me cry a couple times. I cry a lot in the morning. I take Desi on walks and leave her with the nanny and just cry. But she hasn't seen very much of that. And when I make sure to get like slivers of each day where it's just Maddie and me time and we're able to play and laugh and cuddle and all the normal things. She's having a normal 2-year-old time reaction to having a new baby. She's like much more clingy with me and very jealous and having more tantrums and all the sort of normal expected things that's affected her life. I don't feel like I've been able to really have fun with her like I used to because there's this constant monologue buzzing in my head even when it's just me and her. I'm like feeling my boobs all the time. Like, how long is it going to be until I feed him? Is this okay if I spend 5 more minutes with her? Oh, maybe I should pump. And then my boobs like start pulsating with milk and I can't focus on her. All I can think about is Desi and eating and sleeping and all that. So it sucks. Like, I don't feel good about anything, including being with Maddie. But I don't think my momming has suffered of her yet. Like, I think I'm just putting all my energy into my kids right now. They're going to be the last to notice anything is wrong ever, if they ever do. It's like my marriage that has severely suffered. My friendships have suffered. I've withdrawn from all my friends again because I feel like I can't handle even a phone conversation. Like, doesn't fit into my day. I'm really proud of myself for doing this right now, actually.
I'm so amazed that you're able to do this. When I was there, I could not have been. I wasn't even able to talk to anyone.
Embarrassing that I have to be proud that I can get away for an hour. Like, this is incredibly embarrassing and sad.
Yeah, there is still so much shame wrapped up with mental illness and mothering, and it can feel like a competitive blood sport at times.
Yeah, my husband was listening to some other podcast where a mom was talking about her experience with an autistic kid, and she used the phrase, this is not a casserole problem, or this is not a lasagna problem. Like, if you have a real health issue, if you break a leg or if you get cancer or something, everybody brings you casseroles, but nobody brings you casseroles with mental health issues. Like, it's not a casserole problem. People just want you to get better, but from a distance.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't even know how to help someone with depression. Like, partly there's probably almost an attitude that it's contagious, which it's not. But, like, and I don't think people even brought that, like, said it out loud, they'd realize, well, this is ridiculous. It's not contagious. But we aren't trained how to handle our own anxiety and depression, let alone how to help someone else who has it.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, like, I try to think about, like, what are the right things to say or do, or I think, I mean, my best advice to anyone whose loved one has this is just to know it's not personal. It's not about you. It's an illness.
Yes. Yeah, I don't even know how to counsel people on what to say or what to do. Like, I know what not to say and what not to do, but I don't know that anything would help. As Brandon says, I feel very unhelpable right now. I feel like every piece of loving advice that is given to me, I dismiss because of X, Y, and Z. I hate it when people say it's going to get better. And I know that it did get better for me with Maddie. I know that it will get better. And at the same time, it feels like it might not. And like you saying that only brings out the idea in my head that, yeah, but you know what? It might not. Like, what if it doesn't get better and I actually kill myself or something? Like, when you just eat your words then? Like, this might not get better. You know, screw you. And people saying, like, you just need self-care. Like, you need to get out and leave the kids with your nanny and go have a spa day. I can't, like, stop telling me that. I know that's what I need. I know that that's helpful. I get so irrationally angry when people tell me to start taking care of myself. You know, a happy mom leads to a happy baby. You've got to take care of yourself. You've got to take care of I know that. Like, you're not listening. I can't do that because I'm paralyzed right now. I agree with you that that's what I need, and I can't do it because I'm too scared that if I do that, my kid will stop eating and sleeping, and things will be even worse. It's not even that I'm worried about Desi if I leave him. I don't care. Like, maybe he'll be worse off, maybe he won't. It's that I, like, am about the downstream effect for me if I leave. What if he needs to be on the boob all night for the rest of his life? Like, and I never sleep again. I have these crazy illogical thought patterns. Even stuff like, why don't you restart a gratitude journal? I know I need to do that. Why don't you get some exercise? I know I need to do that. Like, that stuff right now feels like it would take away energy from me, which is insane. Like, when I put him down for 5 minutes, all I want to do is sit on the couch and be neutral. Because that doesn't feel like it'll take away energy. Like, writing down things that I'm grateful for actually feels like it's zapping my energy, and I can't do it right now. Like, I don't know how to explain it. That's why I know this feels like depression, because those things don't take away your energy. They give you energy, and, like, I'm just stuck.
Yeah, and I wish that I could be... that just having you come on the podcast, it could be like the magical thing. Like, this is it. This is all Tyra needs to turn around. But I know that's not true. I know that it's more of a journey for you. I mean, yeah. That's why I use the phrase adventures with postpartum depression, because it's more of an adventure than most people will ever have in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. This will be the biggest adventure of my life, I think.
Yeah, I hope, you know, I hope I've written one memoir and I'm done. I'm like, that was enough adventure for me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm so glad you came on the show, because, you know, when you emailed me, you mentioned a lot of moms are on the other side when they come on this show. And I think I've had a couple of moms who aren't fully out of the weeds, but they can see that they're almost out of the weeds. But you're not even in the weeds. You're in the like swampy forest of death from the never ending story. Remember?
Yeah, that's where I am. And I cling to those. I've been listening to your podcast now for weeks, and I've been clinging to those stories of moms who are still having those feelings and describing them. And it's like messed up in a way that I want to hear that, but I do. I think because this is just so isolating, and I realize it's hard to talk about until you're out of it. And I think a lot of that is it's embarrassing. It'll feel less embarrassing for me once I'm out of this. I haven't been this open with anyone about my thoughts yet this time, because it's awful. It feels really shameful and embarrassing. But I thought if I go on this podcast, maybe there's, of course, there's some other moms that are in it, just as deep in it as I am right now. And I just like wanted to say, I'm here, feeling the things, unable to get out of the hole. If there's another mom out there that's laying in bed with a racing heart, drenched in sweat for no good reason, maybe she can think of me and just know that someone else is feeling that.
No, you're not. It's the tagline I always put at the end about, like, you're not alone. But it really is such a lonely experience.
It's so lonely.
Because you don't even understand it yourself.
Yeah, it's so lonely. And you can't explain it to somebody that's not in it. They can't relate at all like they could with physical pain or even loss or grief. People can relate to those things, but feeling like this, it's illogical and people can't relate, and it feels very, very lonely.
I mean, I can't even relate anymore. I was there. I do this podcast. I wrote a book. I mean, this is my great passion, but I can't relate anymore because I'm out of it.
And that gives me hope.
Like, I know that, I mean, it's kind of like a contraction. If you feel, like, I don't remember what a contraction feels like. I know I had it. I know it sucked. But to, like to try to summon that feeling back, my body's like, no, we're not going to do that. Contractions suck. We're not going to practice feeling contractions for fun. And I can't bring back depression. Like the feeling of despair where you think, this is it. This is over. Like, I'm the one that can't be fixed.
Yeah, that's how it feels.
And I mean, I can tell you that when your son's 18, he's not going to want to breastfeed. And you can laugh about that, but that doesn't change the fact that, like, your brain has this, like, pathway that's been carved into just, like this dark obsession over it.
Yeah. God, how do I pull out of it? I literally can't see myself. I can't see how I'm going to stop. I can't visualize it. I can say it. I can say the words, but I can't see how it could possibly end for me.
It will. I mean, I know it's useless that I'm saying it, but if anyone has the resources to get through this, it's you.
Oh, yeah. True.
But it's, like, it's selfish of me to think this, but I'm so glad you came on the podcast, because I'm speaking to a group of local mental health counselors in Pasadena in a few months. And I'm just like, you know, I will be able to say, like, look at, like, a physician who prescribes SSRIs, who counsels women to stay on their medications during pregnancy, who knows everything she has to do. It's still just sucked into this darkness. And it's not, it's just something that we can hold hands and just wait till you're through it.
Yeah, that's it. It feels like that's what I have to do, is wait until I'm through it.
And I think, like, you are doing the most important thing and talking about it in, like, because the light does kill the shame slowly.
Yeah.
And just doing, I mean, making sure you're safe. Like, I would say as soon as you have intrusive thoughts, that's when you have to, like, hit the panic button.
Right. And I feel lucky that I know that and can identify that. I do feel like if I started to have suicidal thoughts, I would know what to do a lot because of my background. But aside from that, there's no reason to hospitalize me right now. I'm eating and drinking. I'm living. My kids are living. It just sucks. I don't want to be living like this anymore. I don't want to wake up and keep doing it. But I am.
Well, if you wanted to be hospitalized for you, that's reason enough. It doesn't matter for your kids. Like, you actually matter for you.
I mean, I've honestly, like, fantasized about that. I've had such dark thoughts. There's one that I want to get better away from my kids. And I hate even seeing that. Like, who am I? But that's who I am right now.
Well, it's, like, I always think, like, our children learn from the way we model our lives. And so I think about Pippa, and I want her to be healthy just for her. I don't want her someday to be healthy because her kids need her to be healthy. And, you know, you always hear happy mom, happy family. But I'm like, how about happy mom? Like, doesn't mom deserve to be? Because my children deserved to be happy and loved from the moment they started screaming when they came into the world. And they weren't contributing anything to society. They weren't changing anyone's diapers. They were the ones pooping and making messes, and yet they were worthy of love. So I have to be worthy of that love too, or they're not.
Yeah.
And you're worthy of your mental health just because you are worthy of your mental health. You know, I'm sure your kids are wonderful and you adore them, but you don't deserve your mental health because they deserve your mental health. You deserve your mental health because you deserve your mental health. But I know your brain, like, I want to just keep talking and keep you on the line because I keep hoping, like, I want to be that person to help you get to some amazing epiphany. But I know, like, that's just not the way PPD works. And you just have to, like, it's just going to suck until one day it doesn't.
It is. I mean, I think it's slowly chipping away. And this is a positive experience. Like, you have no idea. I keep saying, I can't believe I'm even doing this phone call right now. 9 o'clock was, like, a not good time for me because I needed to be napping, busy on my body at this time. But I'm, like, letting my nanny do that in just this really small step, seeing what happens and being able to be curious about, like, what if this is a change for the better because I let the nanny do it. That thought is, I know, really positive, and I'm trying to cling to it and, like, coming on this show and doing that led to that one very small, but ultimately very large mental change. So I think the way out of this is just, like, slow, small, chipping away. If I can, like, get over the hump and keep forcing the soul off down my throat despite my reservations, that's a positive thing.
Yeah, with Pippa, I had the doula basically being a nanny for several weeks full time. And we were living with my parents. And I still felt, like, compelled to be with Pippa all the time. Like, I'm her mother. Aren't I supposed to be here? This is, like, my job. And it was very baby steps. Like, okay, I'm going to leave to take a shower.
Yeah.
Okay, the nanny's trying to put her to take a nap. I guess I'll lay down and try to take a nap for 20 minutes. And it was very, very baby steps. And everyone kept telling me, like, go out for the day. Go get a massage. Go do this. And it took a lot of, like, practice to be like, and now I'm here. And I'm, you know, I'm doing this with you. And I don't have any intention of going back to my kids for at least 5 hours. They're with the babysitter. And I'm, like, but it took me a long time to get to here where I am. All right, Tyra, I will let you go. But let's have you back on the show when you're a little further along with your journey.
That sounds great. I would love to. I can't even wait to, like, talk about it retrospectively.
To enter the, I can't even think of the word, but, you know, the roster of moms who've been on the show who are like, I made it. But this is, like, I'm so glad we'll be able to refer to your part one, because it's almost like you hear someone saying, I made it, and then you're like, do I really believe you were there? Because you made it. Now I don't know that you really made it. But now we have you, and you're like, no, look, here I am. I'm at the bottom of the hill. And we'll be able to, like, talk to you when you're at the top of the hill.
I can't wait.
All right. Thank you, Tyra, so much.
Thank you, Courtney.
So that is it for this week. Thank you, Tyra. I can't say thank you enough for coming on the show. And I really can't, it's hard for me to end this episode because I really did want to find the words that would just cure this experience for Tyra, this illness. And I'm sure that's how a lot of loved ones feel with when they're, you know, when a mom or, you know, a dad, dads get postpartum depression too, when a loved one is suffering with a mental illness during such a tender, vulnerable time of our lives, it's very difficult to feel so helpless. So, you know, someone breaks a leg and you're like, let me run to the grocery store and help you out. Let me bring home stuff because I know, like, it's hard for you to walk around. Let me pick up the crutches for you. Let me, you know, there are things you can do with other injuries and illnesses. But with a mental illness, it's so tough because there is no magic wand. There's no, like, follow steps X, Y, and Z, and this will be solved. It's really all about just taking deep breaths and waiting and being there and paying attention. And, you know, and if you think you have to hit the panic button, yeah, you hit the panic button. But there is no magic solution. And I think my best advice is for anyone who, I know a lot of people listening to the show are moms who have postpartum depression or a mood disorder right now or had it. But I also know I have a lot of listeners who haven't had it, but have a loved one who has this experience. And my best advice is just don't take it personally, because this is not about you. And this is not about that you're not saying the right thing or you're not doing the right thing or that you have somehow failed your loved one, whether it's Tyra or any other mom who has a mood disorder. This is not you failing. This is just something that this is just an illness. And if you have a loved one who seems like, oh, they just seem, if only I could cheer them up with the right joke. There is no right joke. There are no right magic words. It's just a journey. And just stay present. And don't, there shouldn't be anything to forgive when someone has recovered from a mental illness, because it should just be understood, like, shit, you had a mental illness. This is what happens. Maybe you weren't responding to emails, or you weren't answering phone calls, or you weren't laughing at my jokes, you know, and, like, there's nothing to forgive because it was the mental illness doing it, not the person who has it. So, you know, I just, sometimes I have a trouble ending these episodes because I just want to say something that makes this right and makes it so everyone can understand, but this is, you know, this is something that is so big that I can't just do one podcast episode. That's why I have a whole show, and that's why we're on episode, was it 74, and I see no reason. Here's to the next 74 episodes. For those of you listening and who are struggling in the darkness right now, you are not alone. There are thousands of moms like you and Tyra struggling through the darkness right now. And there's nothing I can say to make it right, but I know you can and will make a full recovery with proper support. I love you, and I hope you have a good week. And P.S., show notes will be available at ppdadventures.com. And if listening to this episode has inspired you to share your story on the podcast, email me, Courtney, at ppdadventures.com, and we'll set up an interview for whatever schedule works for you.